This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. We'll be joined later on in the pod, as we always are, by Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes and Brett Ciancia, fresh off a trip to Lubbock as he took in Texas Tech and BYU. What stood out to him regarding that game? And does he believe Texas Tech is full steam ahead going to be the representative for the Big 12 in the college football playoff? We had a new batch of rankings. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. As you know, it's a gambling podcast, so we're not going to spend time debating who should be where and who should be higher, lower, whatever it may be. Faux outrage aplenty.
Oh, that's rich coming from a Notre Dame fan knowing that they're number 8.
Okay, yeah, I get it. You know who should be mad? Louisville fans, but we'll leave that here in just a little bit. But just a reminder, do continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. The numbers on YouTube have been great. Much appreciated to all of you guys. The subscriber numbers are continuing to climb as well. So continue to hit subscribe on YouTube. Hit us with a 5-star rating. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, we might have some giveaways coming up here in the next couple of weeks with our friends from Rainbow Authentics coming to town next week as Hawaii takes on UNLV. But I wanted to get into this, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, this is not going to be terrible radio, but the ACC is just an absolute cluster. As we saw last week, thankfully, Virginia getting the L, get out of our face and our life. But they actually still have a chance to make the college football playoff, believe it or not. And then you see Louisville lose to Cal as an 18.5 point favorite. And once again, I know there's a lot of upset folks that Miami has a win over Notre Dame and they're ranked behind the Irish. Okay, I'll listen to it. Where's the outrage for Louisville coming in at number 20? They've got 2 losses, a win at Miami. So I actually don't have a problem with either teams being where they are. You got to win the games that are in front of you. Can't lose as an 18.5 point favorite if you're Louisville against Cal on a Saturday night. But what I wanted to look at was the ACC odds to win this conference. So Georgia Tech is the favorite at plus 160, and I think rightfully so. Duke is sitting there plus 320, SMU plus 550, Pitt plus 650. I think that is a bad bet. Virginia plus 750. And then can we make a case for Miami or Louisville at 15-1? Now, there was probably a lot of confusion yesterday when the college football playoff show was on and Miami was in the bracket, because they were the highest ranked ACC team and they just slotted them in there. The problem, as many of you know, is that Miami's in a horrible situation to make the ACC championship, because where they sit right now in the standings with 2 losses and also the tiebreakers, because Miami has a loss to Louisville and has a loss to SMU, excuse me. So you look at where they're sitting right now, and they need a lot of help. So I was trying to figure out the scenario that would get Miami into the conference championship game, and I think I found one that is not overly crazy. So Miami has to win out. That's first and foremost. They've got to finish out the season. Miami's remaining schedule sits with NC State, at Virginia Tech, and at Pitt. So once again, the way it's kind of situated right now in the ACC with the standings, it is very much clustered up top, where you've got Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pitt, SMU, and Duke with all 1 conference loss. So we have to hand a number of these teams some losses, right? So if we give Duke the win over Virginia, could they lose one of their final 2 games to UNC or Wake Forest? Duke just went to UConn and lost, so anything is possible. There is a website, by the way, and if you want to enjoy it, bball.notnothing.net, and it has all these crazy scenarios out there. So if we click calculate the standings based off of this situation, and this is also the number one thing outside of winning their games for Miami, that needs to happen. They need Pitt to beat Georgia Tech, or someone needs to beat Georgia Tech. And I think it's safe to say Boston College probably isn't going to do that this weekend. So if Pitt can beat Georgia Tech, and that game will be at Georgia Tech, that opens up the door for Miami. That is a massive opportunity. So Miami fans are going to be massive Pitt Panther fans next Saturday. Because if Georgia Tech wins Saturday against Boston College and next Saturday at Pitt, they wrap up the season against Georgia. Obviously, that game does not have any bearing on ACC standings. And then that leads us into a multi-tie at 6-2. I think the way it's basing out, if we get into that like five-way tie atop the standings at 6-2, that's where Miami has an opportunity to make the college football playoff. Also, I think Miami needs Louisville to beat SMU next week. That is a big thing moving forward there. So if we make SMU beat Louisville next week, then SMU is sitting there at 7-1, but there still is a lot of opportunities that allow Miami to come in at number two. So if you're still with me, it sounds like at 15-1, if you think Pitt has a chance to beat Georgia Tech, which they're going to be a pretty significant underdog at Georgia Tech, not as big of an underdog this week, but it seems like that's the most likely scenario there for the Miami Hurricanes to make it. And I'll say this, I do think despite the two losses to SMU on the road and at home to Louisville, I think Miami is the best team in the ACC, but they have those two losses and now they have to kind of hope that certain things fall their way. But Pitt beating Georgia Tech is not the most crazy result ever in the history of the world, as certainly we have seen in the ACC. The most likely scenario, if you just kind of play it out, is that Georgia Tech will be playing Duke. If Georgia Tech, Duke, and SMU win out, and they will all be favored to do so in that conference, Georgia Tech, as mentioned, has Boston College and Pitt left in the ACC. Duke has Virginia at UNC and Wake. I don't think that's an easy road, especially for a Duke team that has lost three times in the non-con, including most recently to UConn. And then you've got SMU, who plays Louisville next week. That's going to be a really tricky game as well for SMU. So if they win out, it's going to be Georgia Tech versus Duke. If Georgia Tech, Virginia, and SMU win out, it's going to be Georgia Tech, Virginia. But there certainly are scenarios out there. If you want to play one out for Louisville, Louisville has two conference losses, Cal and UVA. They beat Miami, but they still have Clemson and SMU. Big one on Friday night. If Louisville is able to win out, I certainly think there are possibilities. And if they win out and Georgia Tech loses that game to Pitt, you would actually have an ACC championship of Louisville versus Miami. So you've got two 15-1 shots. If one thing kind of falls their way, there is a reality where Louisville and Miami. So as we've gone through these scenarios, and I get it, it's probably not the most entertaining discussion, but as I look at the odds board, Louisville and Miami are not out of it. Now, it's unlikely, but if Pitt is able to pull off that win against Georgia Tech, it opens up a whole big opportunity for a lot of teams to play for the conference championship. So here's the scenario that I just painted. Louisville beats Clemson and then beats SMU. Miami wins out. Pitt beats Georgia Tech next week. According to the tiebreakers, you'd actually have a Louisville versus Miami conference championship game. Now, if Virginia were to win out, that makes it a Virginia-Louisville conference championship game. So I don't know what to expect this Friday night, to be honest, between Louisville and Clemson. The market's coming in on Clemson. I think it's going to be an absolute battle. But when you look at this Louisville situation, they've got SMU next week. They've got Clemson this weekend. There is a scenario where Louisville makes the conference championship game here. But just looking at the possibilities moving forward, if chalk holds, once again, more than likely it's Georgia Tech and Duke. But if we hand Duke a loss, then that opens up some possibilities where Louisville gets in. So once again, I don't know if 15-1 is worth a play on either one of Miami or Louisville, but of the options out there, I think the most intriguing to me would be chalk on Georgia Tech at plus 160 and then see what the number is when they get to the ACC championship game, because Georgia Tech's remaining games are BC and Pitt, and Pitt's at home. And then the other two would be 15-1 shots on Miami and Louisville, because the ACC is so up in the air and has been so wacky over the years. All right, one final thought here before we wrap up the opening segment, because we've gone a little long, and I don't know how entertaining this was to you guys looking through weird scenarios. And I know you want to hear from Wes Reynolds, but we heard from Pat Narduzzi earlier this week, and I read the quotes. I'll read the quotes to Wes here in just a little bit. But essentially what Pat Narduzzi said about this week's Notre Dame-Pittsburgh game is that it doesn't mean anything, right? All that matters is their remaining conference games. And, you know, part of that is factual. You look at Pitt, they play Georgia Tech and Miami. And as we were going through those, you know, scenarios just a moment ago, if Pitt is able to run the table in those two spots, then they're going to the conference championship game. So if they went out in the ACC, they're going to be playing in the conference championship game. So certainly he had a point. But you think bigger picture for college football. You've got College Game Day coming to town for the first time in 20 years. This is a program-defining opportunity against the eighth-ranked team in the country, or ninth-ranked team in the country at Notre Dame, and you're essentially saying, eh, this game doesn't mean anything. And then I went and looked up what the Nard dope has done against Notre Dame. So he's been at Pitt since 2015. His first year, they were 9-point home dogs against Notre Dame in 2015. I'd love to get our guy Mike Sanford's perspective on this game. Notre Dame, I remember it vividly. It was a noon kick in Pittsburgh. Notre Dame comes in, I believe, top 10 in the country, and they had Will Fuller on the roster. And Narduzzi decided to single cover Will Fuller. He went for 7 catches, 152 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Notre Dame led 21-3 at halftime, 42-17 in the fourth quarter before backups came in, the final score 42-30. Now, Narduzzi went to South Bend in October of 2018, and the game was very much in question. Pitt was a massive underdog in that game. They led 14-6. In the third quarter, 14-12 in the fourth quarter. Notre Dame scored a late touchdown to get the win, 19-14. In 2020, the COVID season, Notre Dame was a 10-point road favorite against Pitt and won 45-3. And then in 2023, Notre Dame was a 21-point favorite at home against Pitt and won 58-7. So Notre Dame against Narduzzi, 4-0 straight up, 3-1. ATS so far. So Narduzzi apparently not expected to think this game is important. Maybe it's a big pull the wool over our eyes type of situation. How about this? Brad Powers, I sent him a text. I said, hey, can you do me a favor? I can't remember the last time Notre Dame lost on the road as a big road favorite. Well, Notre Dame has not lost outright as a double-digit road favorite since 1997, and since 2000, Notre Dame as a 7-point favorite or more on the road is 35-0 straight up and 21-14 against the spread. So interesting to note that Notre Dame this century has not lost as a road double-digit favorite or a road favorite of 7 or more. They are 35-0 straight up. Now, they have obviously lost home games, as you can recall, to Northern Illinois and Marshall and Stanford. But on the road, apparently Notre Dame has been taking care of business. All right, let's take a quick break. I know we went long on the open. We got Wes Reynolds, and then we will talk to Brett Ciancia. So take a quick break. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
right, as promised, it is Wednesday, joined by the one and only Wes Reynolds. And Wes, I got to tell you, I'm a little bummed. I was supposed to make my maiden voyage to Assembly Hall as the UW-Milwaukee Panthers, depending on what time you're listening, they might be playing the game right now, are playing against your beloved Indiana Hoosiers. Didn't want to mess with travel this time of year and with everything going on. So my sister's family will be in attendance at Assembly Hall in my honor. But I was looking forward to heading to Assembly Hall. I know this is a football podcast, but I would imagine Hoosier faithful have to be pretty excited about what they saw on the hardwood on Sunday against Marquette.
Yeah, Hondo up there in Chicago. Tucker DeVries, I think, had 25 in the first half and then was quiet in the second half. But and I don't know how good Marquette is going to end up being, but they're a pretty darn good program, typically under Shaka Smart. Maybe this will be a down year, but still, that's a nice win for Indiana in a non-conference neutral. So you got to take advantage of those opportunities. So certainly more optimism about the Hoosier basketball program than there was probably a week ago at this time. But and of course, optimism at an all-time high for the still Indiana Hoosiers with the CFP rankings being released last night. Texas A&M, there were some unhappy Aggies last night. They thought that they were going to move up to number two. So they've got to deal with the harsh reality that they are looking up in the standings at America's college football, the People's College Football Program, as I'm calling them now.
Well, Gus Johnson gave the Heisman Trophy out on Saturday, too.
He did. Go ahead and bet it.
Give him the trophy.
Yeah, I was going to say, thanks, Gus. Appreciate it. You know what? I got to say, Tim, if that didn't involve Indiana, I might have been a little bit annoyed by that call. If it wasn't, but because it was my school, I was like, yes, awesome. I listened to it. I watched it about 150, 200 times, somewhere in that range. But yeah, I probably would have been like, oh my God, man, maybe we're overdoing it a little bit. But I didn't even hear it as it aired live because I was at a little watch party. So we're all just jumping down high five. I'm not even listening to the call. But when they put them up and then when they did the replay and Joel Klatt's like, oh my God, how did he get that foot down? And somehow Omar Cooper did. So Omar Cooper and who they named as Charlie B, Charlie Becker, will probably never have to buy anything in Monroe County again.
Yeah, that Omar Cooper catch was unbelievable. And Indiana in a great spot to be undefeated in the regular season, head into that Big Ten championship. You know, when you look at the Big Ten championship, I'm so fascinated by it. And there are some look-ahead lines. I think I saw FanDuel was around 5.5. I think it adjusted a little bit. You know, we'll talk more about that when we get there. But do you believe right now, Wes, it is simple to say it will be a Heisman off with Sayin versus Mendoza? Or do you think Ty Simpson, with a big game against Oklahoma, Marcel Reed with Texas, you know, waiting in the wings in the last regular season game and the SEC championship. Do you think Reed and Simpson are still in this battle?
Yeah, I think they are, you know, and they got to keep going. It's a week to week thing. As we know, these markets move on not only good news, but bad news. So they're still in the mix. But if you do get to an Ohio State Indiana Big Ten championship game and it's 1-2, that is going to be so overwhelming on championship weekend because you're going to have all the shows there, too. You're going to have Big Noon there. You're going to have Game Day because they're not going to give Fox that real estate, even though they have the game broadcast that night. So they're going to do a little guerrilla marketing is what they call it when somebody that's not affiliated but still goes ahead and shows up on that turf. So if you're going to have 1-2, man, the hype around that thing in Indianapolis is going to be so huge. It might overwhelm the other two guys. And so like Simpson and Reed can't afford like average games, whereas I think like Sayin could throw in an average game at some point the next couple weeks, or maybe even Mendoza can throw in an average game. But I think Simpson and Reed, like, they've got to be really on point because I think that 1-2 in the Big Ten title game is just going to overwhelm everything.
Yeah, we very well could have. And there's a lot of football to be played. I know everyone loses their minds when these first rankings come out, assuming there's never going to be upsets. And then we see what happens in the G5 with Memphis losing. We see Virginia lose. We see Louisville lose as an 18.5-point favorite. BYU gets smoked. So things play themselves out. But right now, it would be nice. Alabama 11-1. Texas A&M 12-0, 12-0 versus 12-0 in the Big Ten championship. Would be pretty cool to see that unfold. But Alabama might have their hands full this weekend. And I want to dive into this game with you. So Oklahoma is coming off a bye. Alabama, of course, last week was able to beat LSU and get the cover in an ugly game, which I think many of us kind of anticipated. So Oklahoma, a team, you look at the metrics, a lot of green on that defense, not so much offensively. What do you make of this spot? The last time we saw the Sooners, I was impressed. They went on the road to Rocky Top, got a nice win. Now you've got that bye week, and you're catching about six here on the road. What do you think of this spot here? We did see Oklahoma West get whacked a little bit earlier this week. Those sevens got scooped up early in the week.
Yeah, and I would still like the Sooners here at plus six as well, because even though I think Alabama's defense is solid, you know, it's certainly well above average, but it's not as overwhelming. Oklahoma has the better defense here. I think they're, if you go in the traditional metric of like total defense being yards per game, now obviously that's not accounting for schedule and whatnot, but they're seventh in the country in total defense in that regard, and they're fourth against the run. 82.4 yards a game they're giving up, and not giving up a lot of points either, just 14 a game. So that is top 10 in America. So they're top 10 in all these different metrics. And I think the defense can keep them in the game. We saw it kind of do that against Tennessee, where Tennessee got out on them a little bit, and then they Aguiar started turning the football over, and then Oklahoma was able to take advantage. But Oklahoma is going to have to get some chunk plays in the passing game. John Mateer, not quite to what he was before that injury earlier this year, you know, slowly but surely kind of making his way back. But he's going to need to be really good, I think, on Saturday down there at Bryant-Denny. And I think he will be. I think they'll get enough plays in the passing game to get it down the field and at least have, you know, a solid offensive performance. And then if you're giving me the underdog with defense, I'm going to go with that just about every single time. So that's what I'm going to do with Oklahoma here against an Alabama team that I know they got there with the number, unfortunately, because I was on LSU plus 10.5. I didn't get that 11, which ended up pushing if you had that on the late number. Yeah. But Alabama never really, I felt, got away from LSU, who was very anemic offensively. Neusmeyer got pulled, and then they put in the kid Van Buren, who's a little bit more of a runner. Still couldn't capitalize. Too many drop passes, too many penalties, too many sacks, too, on that left side. So that left tackle being out for LSU kind of proved to be their demise, because he was getting, poor guy, I don't even remember his name, was getting beat like a drum. But I think Oklahoma, the defense here, getting just six now. So you may get seven for the weekend, because people will think, okay, lay in Alabama less than a touchdown, sign me up. But I like the Sooners here.
So it's kind of become a running bit. I feel like there are teams, Wes, as we bet seasons, and I joked about it with Temple. I've now bet Temple four times on this podcast, thankfully 3-1. Texas, I've had a lot of success betting on or against them. Arkansas is the complete opposite. I can't figure out Arkansas. I can't quit Arkansas. And speaking of that LSU-Bama game, you know, I deem this a letdown spot for LSU. I know they're back at home, but it felt like you had that fired coach bump. You had Frank Wilson take over. You give it everything you got against Alabama. And now how do they respond coming back home? 11:45 a.m. kickoff. Arkansas is going to be coming off a bye here. They're still looking for their first win over neck brace Bobby. I like Arkansas again. I'm going to hate myself, but I took the six with Arkansas here against LSU. I'm curious if you deem this a situational spot that you'd look at.
That'd be the side I'd be on, because Arkansas, of course, has long fired their coach, Sam Pittman, where it's as it's still kind of fresh with LSU a little bit. And I thought LSU, you know, I thought the handicap was right last week. They did play hard for Frank Wilson last week. But now you've dumped all that adrenaline. Now you've dumped all that out, and it's like, and you still came up short. So are you going to be able to rally? And it's like, okay, let's get a win for coach at home, you know, in front of a crowd that's obviously very disappointed with the Tigers being 5-4 and who's the next coach going to be and all that. it'd be Arkansas or nothing for me, because ordinarily I think, okay, mail-in spot for Arkansas, they're what, 2-7, so they're not going to be able to go to a bowl game. So do they treat this as their bowl game, where it's like, okay, right, we got to get something in the SEC, we got to get something on the board, because I believe are they winless in the conference, Tim? I think that Arkansas is, yeah, they're still winless in the conference. They're the only team that is. I think they're still going to try here and get a win. And they probably should have one or two. They blew that game against Mississippi State a couple weeks ago, where I believe they had like 200 yards in penalties. I think I might be inflating that by just a smidge, but I flipped that game over. And at one point I heard the commentator said they had 8 personal fouls. How do you get 8 personal fouls in a college football game? That seems impossible. But Arkansas found a way to do it, and that's what ended up costing them a game, as Mississippi State won at the end. But it'd be woo pig suey or nothing here for me.
Arkansas is winless in the SEC. Here are their margin of loss: 6 to Ole Miss, 3 to Tennessee, 3 to A&M, 9 to Auburn, 3 to Mississippi State. I think the postgame win expectancy against Mississippi State was like 75% or somewhere in that ballpark. So, you know, always fun. And, you know, sometimes you just have a glutton for punishment. And apparently Arkansas is that for me. I did not bet them, shockingly enough, against Notre Dame, which was a dead loser and ultimately led to the demise of Sam Pittman. So that leads us to the Notre Dame Pitt game. And, you know, we discussed this a little bit in the open. Pat Narduzzi's comments on Monday, when asked if the Notre Dame game was going to be a, quote, must win, he said, absolutely not. It is not an ACC game. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not an ACC game. I'll gladly get beat by 103 or 110-10 in that game. They can put up 100 on us as long as we win the next two after that. But again, our focus is on Notre Dame and as getting as many wins as we can. Good save, coach. We've seen this number go up, Wes. The number was around 10. It's now 11.5, 12.5. Is this a situation where you poke the bear, or is Notre Dame going to be fired up to put up as many points as possible against the Pitt Panthers on Saturday afternoon?
Well, I don't think they're going to quite win by 100 or 110, but I do think Notre Dame's going to win by enough here. And I did lay 11, and now you're seeing some 12, actually. 12.5, it got hit as of Wednesday morning. Pitt's offense has been better, I think, with Heinchel at quarterback. I think he's done a really good job. So they've been very potent, but I don't think they're going to be able to stop Notre Dame. And I know Narduzzi's reputation and his pedigree, basically, from coaching, a longtime defensive coordinator at Michigan State, is defense. But I don't think Pitt is going to be able to stop Notre Dame at all. I think Notre Dame has got it rolling with that running game. Jeremiah Love has been absolutely tremendous. He's going to be a first-team All-American. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Probably not getting the Heisman love that maybe he should, to be honest with you, but I don't think Pitt is going to be able to stop them. And I think Notre Dame's defense, I know we malign them, and I think very fairly malign them early in the season with Chris Ash now taking over for Al Golden. The defense has improved. It really has improved, I think, for the Irish. I think it was the Arkansas game, actually, where you really saw them finally kind of turn it around a little bit defensively, because they of course, the Miami game, the A&M game, even against Purdue moved it all over them, especially in the first half. But then Arkansas, you hold them to 13, you hold Boise State to 7, you hold NC State to 7, USC got 24, USC is one of the best offenses in the country. And then you go to BC, hold them to 10, hold Navy to 10, despite the fact that they had Woodson in for Blake Horvath at quarterback last week. So this defense is making some legitimate strides for Notre Dame. And I think this is just the point, and this was the point of the schedule where we kind of pointed to Notre Dame, like, okay, this is where they're going to go on their run, because they now have at Pitt, and then they have Syracuse and Stanford remaining. If they're 10-2, they're going to be in the college football playoff. There's enough, I think, quality wins there for them. And they're just starting to roll. I would power rate Notre Dame probably I wouldn't rank them number 5 in the CFP, but I'd power rate them top 5 right now based on how they're playing. I think they roll Pitt on Saturday.
Yeah, we had Brad Powers on VSiN Primetime Tuesday night, and he said he has them number 4 in his power ratings right now. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm always pessimistic about the Irish. People know that. But you mentioned the Navy game, and we got a pretty big surprise on Saturday when Blake Horvath was ruled out. There were some whispers in the afternoon that that could be a possibility. And then the line, you know, exploded up to 30. Look, I don't know. I'm assuming Blake Horvath is going to play on Saturday in Annapolis. And I just want to do kind of the simple math exercise. And I know Todd Furman used to do this on his podcast, Bet the Board. So we go back to October 10th, Wes. North Texas closes as a 2.5-point favorite against South Florida. Now, they played the game, South Florida won 63-36, but that was the market's perception of that game a month ago, was North Texas minus 2.5 at home against South Florida. North Texas then played Navy on November 1st down in Denton, and that line closed 6.5. So if you do the simple math, South Florida on a neutral based off of the odds makers should be -4. Now, South Florida won the game. Navy lost to North Texas, so you got to do some upgrading. I'm looking at this number. South Florida -10.5 at Navy. It just seems a bit off. I know Navy's defense is very, very leaky, and you got to ask about the question of the health of Blake Horvath, but it does feel like this is the tip top of the market for South Florida. When you look at two common opponents that they both played in Denton within the last month, and the difference in the point spread was 4 points, and now South Florida's laying double digits on the road against Navy.
Yeah, it probably is a little bit of a bridge too far, and I think South Florida's getting inflated because their offense is putting up inflated numbers, and the fact that they're one of the top 5 to 10 offenses, I think, in the country, as was North Texas, who got away from Navy a couple weeks ago, and Navy has lost 2 in a row. Despite that, Tim, they are still number one in the American Athletic standings at 5-1, and then you have a horde of teams behind them: North Texas, South Florida, Tulane, East Carolina, 4-1, Memphis, with their loss last week at home to Tulane, they fall to 4-2. Maybe they're going to be out of the mix as the Silverfield to Arkansas scuttlebutt has obviously, I think, played a distraction in that game. But I think that this is a little bit high, because keep in mind, Navy's got a pretty good offense, too. You know, this is a club that's averaging 440 yards a game and 32 points a game in their own right, mostly on the ground. But they could still throw the ball a little bit, especially with Blake Horvath. So we'll see if he's going to be available. I kind of tend to think he's going to here with Navy. And then that wasn't a conference game for Navy last week, even though you always want to beat the Irish, and that's an old time rivalry. But maybe they exercised discretion, being the better part of valor here, and said, okay, let's save Horvath for next week. I don't know if that's the case. It certainly is plausible. So, yeah, I thought that this was a little bit heavy. And I know South Florida's offensive numbers, offense is always going to get more respect seemingly in the numbers than defense does, at least from the initial opening numbers. And then obviously the bettors bet them to where they should be and the market comes in. But it'd be Navy or nothing for me. I have not bet this, though, yet, because really have seen kind of a static line. It's been pretty much, 10, 10.5, like all week. So you haven't seen, because I think a lot of people are waiting to see if Horvath is going to be able to go for the midshipman.
Well, it was Veterans Day on Tuesday, so we talked some Navy. Let's talk a little Air Force. Air Force gets a, based off of the numbers, a pretty fortunate win against San Jose State. And you and I last week on this program discussed UConn. We love the situational spot for the Huskies taking on Duke in the midst of, you know, a big win over Clemson. Next week being this week now, Duke would play Virginia, and UConn follows through. They win that game 37-34. Joey Fagnano was great, 25 touchdowns over 0 interceptions this year. But you've seen this UConn team, Wes, come down to their opponent, right? They went on the road and played a Rice team as a 2-touchdown favorite and lost that game outright. And I think this could be a similar spot here. The crowd was really good at the Rent in East Hartford on Saturday. I don't know what it's going to look like this Saturday, noon Eastern kick. Air Force is catching a touchdown, and FanDuel actually has a 7.5, which is what I personally bet. Are we going to be aligned on this one? Do we like the Falcons catching a touchdown plus against UConn in what probably is a letdown spot for the Huskies?
We are going to be aligned on this one. I also like Air Force. Senior day there in UConn, and then they have a game at FAU next week. 7 wins, so they are bowl eligible, so that's a good accomplishment for an independent program. And UConn, you know, not the easiest job right now because they're not in a conference in the football bowl subdivision. So I do think that this is a little bit of a come down. Now they not only beat Duke, I thought they were the better team than Duke.
Yep.
Even though they trailed by a score like, you know, 4 or 5 points for a lot of the game, I thought that they were the better team, and they got the turnover margin and eventually got the Blue Devils in overtime off that big win over Clemson. So this is, I think, the come down spot, and this is the senior days, and we can get to that across the board. Like, that's what we were talking about before we even started recording about Indiana laying 30 to Wisconsin. It's like, I don't know if I can lay that because it's senior day for a program that has now accomplished something. Mm-hmm. And UConn, you know, not on the Indiana level, of course, but they've accomplished something. Now they're getting in bowl games and on the regular. Jim Mora Jr., I think, has done a great job kind of resurrecting, at least to a degree, a moribund program, despite the fact that they have a lot of things against it. Not being in a conference, the funding and the money for the football program, hasn't really gotten up there as of yet. And Jim Moore Jr. and UConn, you know, they're finding ways to win game against this kind of piecemeal, you know, mixed schedule. And this is, I think, maybe the come down spot here where it's like, are they kind of happy? Okay, we got what we accomplished. You know, we got bowl eligible. And Air Force, like every military academy, like Army or Navy, very good as underdogs historically. So give me the Falcons.
All right, a couple more games I want to get your thoughts on. I know this is a card that you and I are kind of searching around. Last week, it felt like we had a bunch of situational spots that we liked, and ultimately, it was a pretty fruitful week, thankfully, for the podcast. Let's go to Texas Tech. They're taking on UCF. What a massive spot last week. I think you and I both were on the Red Raiders there. The market loved Texas Tech. That thing closed almost 2 touchdowns. They win the game very impressively, 29-7. They're a 24-point favorite against Central Florida. There are some 24.5s out there. I haven't gotten there yet, Wes. This is a letdown spot, certainly, for Texas Tech. They are back at home. Joey McGuire feeling himself, calling out Notre Dame earlier this week and, you know, giving praise to BYU for joining the Big 12. What do we make of this spot with Texas Tech taking on Central Florida in Lubbock?
Yeah, and UCF, by the way, 4-5, so they got to win 2 of their last 3 to get bowl eligible. So that means they either got to win this week or win at BYU. That's a pretty Herculean task, I think, for Scott Frost and UCF. But yeah, Texas Tech, you know, calling out Notre Dame, calling out all these other guys, it's like, hey, let's handle your business first and win the Big 12, where they are leading, by the way, by a half game in the win column, 6-1, BYU and Cincinnati right behind now at 5-1. You haven't won that Big 12 necessarily yet down in Lubbock, even though I think that they are the best team in that conference. You got a bye week next week, and then you go to West Virginia. So doesn't it seem too easy? Like, it's almost like being priced like it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to win this thing. I just thought the number was a little bit too high. I think they're going to beat Central Florida, and they're going to end up beating even a West Virginia team, by the way, that is showing improvement. You know, Rich Rod has got them improving at least late in the season with that win at Houston a couple weeks ago. So that's not going to necessarily be a gimme on country roads, but they're the best team in the Big 12. I do believe that they're going to get to the Big 12 title game. Probably are going to be at least one of the representatives in the playoff. But I just thought 24 or even 24.5, just way too high here.
You know, Wes, looking at the schedule, I was very much looking forward to a possibility of fading Memphis this week. But they lost to Tulane last week. So now you're kind of in this mindset of, all right, where are they at from a head-to-head space standpoint? So Memphis, who was in the bracket a week ago, loses to Tulane. Now they are very much out of sight, out of mind. And you look at the G5 odds to make the playoffs. South Florida's up there, North Texas up there, James Madison, Tulane. Memphis is way down there. What do you make of this spot down in Greenville, East Carolina, laying 2.5 at most spots? Circa's at 3, Westgate's at 3. Do the Pirates give the Tigers a tough test down there?
I think that they do. And East Carolina, by the way, in the mix here, they're 4-1 in the American. Their only loss was to Tulane a couple Thursday nights ago. But all of a sudden, this team's won 3 in a row. Yeah, against Tulsa and Temple and Charlotte. But still, winning begets winning, and that gives you a little bit of confidence. So I think East Carolina certainly has a lot of confidence right now. And then Memphis, what's Brendan Lewis's physical condition? Because even if he goes, if you watch that game last week against Tulane and even the win that they had against South Florida a week prior, he's not 100%. He's out there like really gutting it out on that ankle. So he is not near up to his physical capability, even though he's given it the old college try, shall we say. But yeah, East Carolina for me on the money line, and there's even some 2.5s out there if you want to lay the number. You can still lay less than 3 with East Carolina. Now, this is a step up in class because they really haven't beaten anybody per se. So this is their chance to get kind of a signature win against one of the better programs in the conference where they could say, hey, we're really turning this program around. And, you know, we're going to get back to the David Garrard days down there in Greenville, North Carolina. We're going to get back to where, hey, we were kind of really sneaky good here on the national scene. So I like the Pirates here over the Tigers.
All right, drinks on Wes Reynolds at Sup Dogs if they're able to get this victory down there in Greenville. All right, we'll wrap on this. We've got a great game, and I put air quotes, great game, on the CW at 10 Eastern as Washington State. These games this year are hilarious. Washington State is taking on Louisiana Tech at 10 o'clock Eastern on the CW. You mentioned bowl eligibility, right? And, you know, no coach would ever say, hey, we're probably going to lose next week. But you look at the schedule for Wazoo. After they lost to Oregon State, shockingly, in Corvallis, they had a bye week. They get La Tech this week. Then they go to James Madison before finishing up the season against Oregon State again. They've got to win 2 of those 3 games. They're going to be a favorite in 2 of those 3 games. And then you add in the fact that Louisiana Tech just lost their quarterback, Blake Baker, to a torn ACL. The market's starting to get a little pricey. This number is up to 7.5, even some 8.5s out there. I just wonder, Louisiana Tech, you lose your starting quarterback, you lose a game on like a 50-yard field goal against Delaware, Wes, and now you've got to travel to Pullman to play Washington State at 10 o'clock at night, mm-hmm, Eastern time. I don't know if they show up for this game, so I kind of like Wazoo here. What do you make of this spot?
Yeah, I do too as well, and it looks like Evan Bullock would start. Evan Bullock, by the way, did make several starts last year, so not a total greenhorn, but yeah. Wazoo would be, I think, the play here. It has gone above the 7 now to 7.5. There's even some 8.5 at a couple places. So there is a little variance on the board. Yeah, this would be Wazoo or pass. And if I can tie this into another game, because you did mention this team, Tim, we're scouring or like, okay, what games are out there? And we're obviously, you know, you talk about the SEC games and all the games with the teams that are in playoff contention. How about this one? This one really caught my eye when you mentioned Oregon State. Oregon State at Tulsa. I don't believe that's a CW extravaganza. Not like the one against Sam Houston State was to close out last Saturday night. But
all-time box score game.
Yes, and Oregon State, who dominated the box score, but lost to Sam Houston State, who I believe had not covered a game, nor even won a game all season long, nor won nor covered, I should say. And Sam Houston State goes to Reser Stadium and beats Oregon State. So it's like, you got to bet against Oregon State, right? How can they be a favorite on the road? And that's telling me that this is right at Tulsa, by the way. Tulsa, of course, 2-7 now on the year are the Golden Hurricanes. So, ew, man, I may have to do this. This may be a GPG for me, general principle game, laying Oregon State. They couldn't beat Sam Houston State at home. How are they going to go on the road to the mighty Tulsa Golden Hurricane and beat these guys? But I think that they are. This is a non-conference game, by the way, of course, for both teams. Tulsa has not yet won a game in the conference. They've won 2 games. They beat Abilene Christian. And, of course, got Mike Gundy fired there in Stillwater. His last hurrah there at Boone Pickens Stadium as they beat Oklahoma State. But Oregon State road money line. Hell with it. Let's do it, Tim.
Oh,
go Beavs.
I mean, that is the typical from Friday, the dad spraying the Lysol. You know, I mean, that is as stinky as it gets.
Sometimes you got to go to the bottom, man.
You
got to be a bottom feeder, and that's what we're doing here.
They all, as Brent Musburger told us, they all cash the
same,
do. Right?
They do. That's like my buddy Scott Spritzer, who's a pro bettor here in town. If there's a line on the game, it's important. Even though this is not important in the grand scheme of college football, but this is going to be important if you're going to lay the Beavers like I am here.
All right, let's get to the Wednesday wrap up with Wes, sponsored by Stacy Nolan. All right, let's go Oklahoma against Alabama.
Sooners, the sevens may appear on the weekend. I would still take a little bit less with six. Better defense, getting points. Alabama looked a little shaky to me against LSU, even though they got the win in the cover. Boomer Sooner for me.
Air Force headed to the Rent in East Hartford.
Yeah, let's take the Fly. I'm not going to call them boys because they're grown men and they're serving our country. The Fly Men of Air Force. I like them plus +7 at UConn.
All right. The Irish head to the house formerly known as Heinz Field on Saturday.
Can still lay 11.5, even though there's a higher out there, too. But that's the low right now. And you want to lay the low. I think Notre Dame is going to roll over Pittsburgh. I think the Irish, they're not a team right now, Tim, that I think you want to get in front of based on how they're playing.
All right, let's head to the Big 12. Texas Tech off a big win. They're catching or laying 24.5 at some shops against UCF.
Yeah, we're going to go with UCF here. You might get a Texas Tech. They had game day there, and they rolled BYU. They dominated BYU. So now it's like, oh, it's a foregone conclusion. UCF can be a little pesky. We'll see if my former Hoosier, Taven Jackson, out of Greenwood, Indiana, can get him within the number. I think he can.
Let's go to, I think it's at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium down in Greenville, North Carolina. ECU laying a short number against Memphis.
Yeah, ECU for me, and I'll probably lay some money line. You could still lay 2.5, by the way. So I wonder Memphis's psyche after losing that game against Tulane, after that big comeback they made against South Florida, and then lose last week. Brendan Lewis, the quarterback, he's gutting it out. Got to give him credit, but he's not near 100%.
All right, we'll wrap on this. Save the best for last. 1 p.m. ESPN Plus. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as the Beavers of Oregon State come to town. And Oregon State, for some reason, is the favorite. You're going to embrace the stink in this one.
Yeah, go Beavs. They lose to winless Sam Houston State, who I believe were they the last winless team in FBS, Tim? Correct me if I'm wrong. You're on top of that usually. I didn't even know. Now I don't even follow standings. I'm just looking at numbers on screens here. But Oregon State, for me, like, how the hell are they a road favorite when you lose at home to Sam Houston State in the after dark game on the CW? Gotta lay them on the road, right?
Got to. I mean, it's your God-given right to lay points with Oregon State on the road against Tulsa. Gotta love it. Wes, always appreciate it, sir. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk next week.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Tim.
There he is, our guy Wes Reynolds. And when we come back, we'll talk to Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and as we always do on Wednesdays, we are joined after Wes Reynolds by Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews. Follow him there on Twitter, and also check out the Pick Six Plus informational packet that I enjoy and I'm reading as we talk right now. It is Brett Ciancia, and Brett, you were down at the site of College Game Day, Texas Tech and BYU. I ended up laying the chalk with Texas Tech, was very happy with the result, and you were there in person. What stood out about this Texas Tech team to you? And as we project forward, boy, they are in a very advantageous spot to get a home playoff game in late December.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I made the trip out to West Texas. It's an area I've always been fascinated about, and really was a football guy trip because the night before we were down in Odessa Permian, the site of the Friday Night Lights movie and book. So got to see them clinch a district title down in Permian, took the 2-hour drive north to Lubbock and got the game day experience. You know, it was cool to see Texas Tech in the spotlight. It's a very proud people. They're very nice people. They wanted to really show off their school, their program, and they flexed. And I was really impressed with them on the field. What stood out the most to me for Texas Tech was their defense, the front seven especially. I mean, this could be the best front seven in America. It parallels and could argue with Ohio State, with Oklahoma and Notre Dame as the best defense in the country. They got the sack leader, David Bailey. He's got 11.5 sacks, leads the country in that category. And then Jacob Rodriguez, the guy they call J-Rod, they're pushing him for Heisman. And if you look at the do-it-all numbers, you know, tackles, forced fumbles, picks, fumble recoveries, he's got it all. In fact, it's the best stat line in 20-plus years of any FBS player if you're looking at tackles, forced fumbles and picks. So he's all over the field. He's their star. And then on offense, you can see the athletes on the outsides. I thought that stood out. Cameron Dickey at running back. And the final score, 29-7, I think it could have been worse if you look at how Tech performed in the red zone. Only scored twice, two touchdowns on 7 trips in the red zone. They got to work on converting a little bit, or else that would have been maybe a 40, 50-point win. So very impressed with Texas Tech. It lived up to the expectations I had for them, and they remain in my top 5.
Yeah, you look at their team page on Pick 6 Previews. A lot of green on that defense, a lot of green on the offense, too. Some of that may be skewed by early season opposition, but the defensive numbers based off your game grader, Brett, it is not skewed defensively. I mean, this is as real of a defense as there is in the country.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they were flying all over the field. They were closing down the running lanes. BYU had their star running back come back. He was injured for a couple games. He came back, LJ Martin. They completely silenced him. I think he had like 40 yards. Bear Bachmeier, usually a big threat in the run game for BYU. He was totally neutralized. So, yeah, they are for real. And they've done it now twice against ranked teams in the committee's top 25. They blew out BYU Saturday. And then early in the year, they blew out Utah 34-10, and that was with their backup quarterback, Will Hammond. So, yeah, I've been high on Tech. We've been high on Tech on this show the whole way. They're also a giant against the spread. 9-1, they lead the country in almost every situational split against the spread. All their wins are by 20-plus points, so just very dominant. And I'm going to continue to ride them into November, and I think they can make a serious push in the playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fascinating to see how it ultimately plays out, what number they will eventually land on. Do they get the 5 seed, have a playoff game against maybe the G5 representative? Final note here on Texas Tech, you know, you've got your game grader on your front page there, and, you know, that incorporates all of the games this season. Where do they come in your game grader top 25?
Yeah, so they check in the top 5. I've got them number 4 in the country right now. Very impressed, like we talked about. And it's funny you bring up the playoff seeding, because people down in Lubbock, they kept bringing this up. They don't want the first round bye. They want to be number 5, have the home game in Lubbock, and they want either the Texas Longhorns to come to Lubbock or the A&M Aggies. They are already licking their chops to have a Texas Bowl hosted in Lubbock, as you know, one final statement for their program. But I thought about this too. With Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 for the SEC, I always wondered who would fill that power void at the top, that power vacuum. It looks like Tech. I mean, they are very serious about being the Big 12 program going forward. They've got the money, the resources, the fan support, and now they're proving it on the field. So a lot to like from Texas Tech going forward.
Yeah, and we'll see how they fare in the Big 12 championship game. They've been so dominant that if they were to stumble in the Big 12 championship game, you wonder if they still were to get in with an at-large based off of their current play. Well, I want to stay in the Big 12 for a moment here, because a team that the committee has been pretty high on here, despite a couple of losses, is Utah. They came in last week at 13. They did not play. They remain at 13. And I feel like your numbers tend to agree with the committee, because you've also got a column on Pick Six previews, looking at the last four games. How are these teams playing? And I actually referenced this when I made my pick on Wake Forest last week, where I said, look, UVA and Wake Forest are basically the same team over the last four games based off of your game grader. You've got Utah pretty high over the way they've played these last four games.
Yeah, they really are. I've got them number two in that last four games category. And you're right, it is a number I like to look at a lot because it gives you a more accurate view of how they're performing at the time, kind of a heat check heading into the current game. So yeah, Utah, as good as you can find the last four games, really you can extend it out to the last five games. It started with after the Texas Tech loss, they blew out West Virginia by 34. They beat Arizona State by 32, Colorado by 46. Remember that big first half where it was 43-0 and they had them in negative yardage at halftime. And then their last time out, they destroyed Cincinnati. So, you know, and even their close loss to BYU, I like to factor that into game grader. That's still, is it a game that if you look at the advanced metrics, they should have won the game. And you can't do what ifs, but numerically, yeah, that looks solid too. So they're one of the hottest teams in the country. The committee reflects that too, because them and Notre Dame, they're the two teams out there that, yes, they have two losses, but their margins of victory, their per play numbers, all the advanced metrics love Utah and Notre Dame. So that's why I think you see the committee valuing them higher than other two lost teams. And
you know,
if you look ahead for Utah.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brett, if you want a rematch of Utah taking on Texas Tech, there's a pretty simple scenario. The ACC is just wild. But if Cincinnati beats BYU next week, it leads to a likely four-way tie. And based off of tiebreakers that I've been reading, I think Utah would actually get the edge, assuming they win out. They beat Baylor this week, Kansas State and Kansas to close out. So there's a chance we could get a Utah versus Texas Tech rematch in the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, and I'll go one step further. I think BYU is going to be tagged with another loss. I think they're going to lose this Saturday outright against TCU. So you're talking a second loss to TCU, a third loss to Cincinnati. They're out of the picture. And then you're comparing two-loss Arizona State to two-loss Utah to two-loss Cincinnati. And obviously Utah blew both of them out. So the head-to-heads are going to go in their favor in that tiebreak scenario. So I agree with you. I think you're poised to see Texas Tech versus Utah. And I know the final score was 34-10. You can't do the what-if game because that was with their backup quarterback, Will Hammond. But it was almost tied. I think it might have been tied going into the fourth quarter. A couple turnovers flipped that thing late. But I think it was more competitive than 34-10 would suggest. So I want to see them line up again. That'd be a heck of a rematch.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. And there was a touchdown called back for an ineligible man down the field. That was the biggest offensive play for Utah in the first half. TCU BYU is the stormy game this week, by the way. TCU right now, 4.5-point road dog at BYU. So you're calling for the outright upset there. Is that because of what you saw from BYU in person?
Well, with BYU all season, they've been living on the edge. We talked about this. I called them UVA 2.0. I mean, I think they were stronger and better statistically than UVA, but they've had a lot of close calls. Three double-digit comebacks that they came back from to win. Again, you credit the resiliency, but looking forward, I don't know how sustainable that is. So a little bit with BYU, I think they're going to come in roughed up. I mean, that was a physical game, a physical defense they went against. Their offensive coordinator, Aaron Roddick, said that was the best front seven he's ever coached against his whole career. And he's a longtime coordinator. So I think they're going to come in pretty roughed up. And then with TCU, a team that's a little bit of a misleading record, they're 6-3. I thought they outplayed Iowa State. You look at the advanced stats. Actually, it's funny with my game grader, it gave TCU a better grade than Iowa State, even though they lost on the scoreboard. You know, Iowa State benefited from that great punt return and some turnovers. But I think TCU is better than their record shows. So I'm going to go with TCU here. I have it about a pick 'em in my numbers. So obviously with the 4.5 spread, I'll go with TCU.
Late night games in Provo. We actually got a pretty good late night slate this week. We just joked about the Washington State Louisiana Tech game being part of that late night slate. Maybe not as appealing as TCU and BYU. Also have San Diego State, Boise State, which has taken a little bit of a hit from a a standpoint of just the excitement, but I think that's going to be a slugfest between those two teams. Staying out west, let's go to USC and Iowa. Iowa playing an absolute war last week against Oregon, coming up short in the rain and the, I don't know if it ended up snowing there, but it was just ugly all game long. And you've got a USC team that, you know, I was talking to someone earlier this week, Brett, about this game, and they said it feels to them kind of like the Michigan game back in the middle of October, where Michigan went out there and USC kind of just bullied them in that spot. Curious what you make of this one. Right now, USC creeping towards a 7-point favor. There's still some 6.5s out there, but that number hovering around a touchdown with the Trojans against Iowa.
Yeah, I agree with that number. And then some. I think USC by 8.5 or 9 is where I've got it. And I'm glad you brought up the Michigan comparison. I had that written down. There are three similar games that USC played, you know, talking about defense first type of programs, slow tempo offense. That's Michigan, Northwestern, and Nebraska. They're 3-0 against the bunch. They beat Michigan by 18, beat Northwestern by 21 last Friday night, and they beat Nebraska on the road by 4. So I think it's a similar comp there. I also hate the situational split for Iowa coming off that grinder of a game. You talked about how physical and then the weather and the near victory. I thought when Gronowski went in for that late touchdown, I thought that was like the defining moment of their season. And then it gets outdone a couple of plays later by Dante Moore. So just the emotional aspect and then the travel out to LA. We've seen this all across the Big Ten and then now the new ACC deal with Stanford and Cal. Teams traveling west or vice versa, you have to factor that in a little bit into your line. So I like USC here, staying at home. They have the extra day of rest playing last Friday night. And also at home, Lincoln Riley, 5-0 straight up this year, 4-1 against the spread, 15-2 straight up the last couple of years. So I like them in this spot. I think USC is going to win.
All right, let's get a couple thoughts on some of the big games, your matchups of the week. As you pointed out in your preview, it's Notre Dame, Pitt, Bama, Oklahoma, Georgia, Texas. And first, I want to start with Virginia, Duke. You know, I have been a proponent that Virginia has got a horseshoe stuck up there. You know what? Well, it didn't play out that way last week, right? Chandler Morris gets hurt. They, you know, give up a punt return against Wake Forest and kind of felt like all of the fortune turned on them. They lost fumbles for the first time all year. It sounds like Chandler Morris is going to hopefully be available for this game. And then you've got Duke, and they're one of the more perplexing teams this year because, you know, they've got the loss to Illinois, the loss to Tulane, and then last weekend losing to UConn. But if they win this game, Brett, they're in the driver's seat to go to the ACC championship game. So I'm curious what you make of this spot, UVA about a 6-point underdog against the Blue Devils.
Yeah, if you look ahead a little bit, this could be for a ACC title spot. Yep. The winner of this game would then be projected to play against Georgia Tech. So it's got a huge stake. Talking about quarterback, Chandler Morris, I was trying to find some injury news on that. It sounds like he was held out of practice Monday and Tuesday with concussion protocol. We're here recording midday Wednesday. No news yet whether he's active, but that's going to be a game time decision. If they have to go with Daniel Kalen, he was a little bit rough last week, although, you know, it's kind of a next man in, middle of the game type of thing. He lost 2 fumbles, only mustered up 6 points, but it was a good Wake Forest defense. So I don't know really what you have with him at quarterback. With Duke, you're right. It's like, overall 5-4, but 4-1 in the ACC where it counts. So, they perform well in conference. The deal with Duke is turnover margin. If they can limit their turnovers, their giveaways, they're going to win the game. In their 4 losses, they're -9 turnover margin. So, and you saw that against Illinois. They lost like 5 fumbles in that one. So can they take care of the ball? I think they can. UVA, I mean, you look at their stat profile, you watch them. I don't know that they're excellent really at anything, especially if you take Chandler Morris off the field. So too much concern there. I'll go with Duke.
Couple other games just to get your thoughts on. We mentioned Notre Dame Pitt. We've talked about it a bunch on the show. Narduzzi had the interesting quotes earlier this week. We could lose 110-10. It wouldn't matter. I know your game grader does not kind of line up with where the market's at. Does the quotes from Narduzzi make you a little bit worried about this spot? I'm curious what your numbers have said about Pittsburgh, because I imagine this is a team that has drastically improved as the year has gone on.
Yeah, they really have. And, you know, they opened up 2-2. They lost to West Virginia in the backyard brawl and then lost another close one. Then after that bye, they made a switch at quarterback. They benched Eli Holstein for the true freshman, Mason Heinschel, and he's performed really well. I mean, he's really evasive in the pocket, or elusive, I should say, evading pressure, you know, wheeling and dealing. I think one quarterback list had him number one in the country for a couple weeks, maybe a little bit too fast, too soon, but he's performed really well. It's really caused an uptick in their passer rating in my game grader, so that's been huge. Defense too. I mean, you forget they have a great front seven. Their linebacker core, they call themselves the Sharks. They're turnover happy, takeaway happy. They're always taking back pick sixes. So you know, lots of like from a Narduzzi defense. But I think you're right that Notre Dame is just a stronger team, both sides of the ball. Top five in both my numbers, offense and defense, all the opponent adjusted numbers. I can't find a statistical flaw at all with Notre Dame. So they're right up there as one of the stat giants of 2025. So you got that. You got Freeman is great as a favorite, one of the best in the country over his tenure at Notre Dame. What else? Extra motivation card is in there. Margin of victory card is in there because they're trying to build up that resume, beef it up with some margin of victory. So I think Notre Dame is going to roll here. I have to disagree with the numbers. I know the numbers are calling for maybe a touchdown spread, but I think Notre Dame is going to flex big time here.
Yeah, curious to see that Pitt run defense, which has been stout, and you pointed out in your numbers, currently eighth when you have opponent adjusted per play, third in just raw numbers in the country. But yeah, that's going to be a fun matchup to see Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price against that Pittsburgh run defense. All right, as we wrap things up here, speaking of defense, Oklahoma gets Alabama this week in Tuscaloosa, the Crimson Tide coming off of the win over LSU. The Sooners had a bye week. So what do your numbers point out with Oklahoma and Alabama? What matchup are you looking forward to the most in this one?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Alabama's offensive line against this Oklahoma front seven. I think it's one of the best defenses in the country. I said it earlier in the show, you go Ohio State, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. That's the four, no matter what category you're looking at, pass, rush, everything, they're top five or top 10. So an elite defense with Brent Venables. The Alabama offensive line, they can't get a run push. And I thought this was going to kind of a September problem that they'd fix as the year goes on. They're bottom 10 in the country in my offensive line run push. So if they're in a tight game, they're trying to grind out a win with some run, some rushing attack, it's going to be tough. So that puts even more pressure on Ty Simpson, who has been excellent. He's been great in all these SEC ranked games. You wonder how much is left in the tank. It just seems like every week Alabama's in a battle. So this is one of those I have to disagree with the numbers again. My numbers have it Alabama by 9. I think you got to give Oklahoma a shot here to cover. We'll see about who wins outright, but I look like Oklahoma to stay within a score.
You know, Texas, they have been a team that has been very polarizing this year. And now here they are, 7-2, currently 10th in the college football playoff rankings, still have Georgia and A&M on the schedule here. They've found ways to win some games, and I'm not even including Vanderbilt 2 weeks ago because they were up 34-10 in that one. They win in overtime, magical comeback against Mississippi State, win in overtime against Kentucky. So this team is very, like I said, polarizing, Brett, but they're right there in the thick of it. And if they were able to win on the road at Georgia, that would certainly throw some curveballs to the committee. What do you make of this spot here in Athens on Saturday?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up Texas's close calls, because all I hear about with Georgia, the narrative is that, oh, they keep surviving close games. And that's true. They've won a couple tight ones. But if you're going to forecast this matchup, you have to look at Texas doing the same thing. And when you look at how they've won close, Georgia did it with Gunnar Stockton wheeling and dealing in the fourth quarter, very resilient quarterback, you know, actually earning the points. Texas, a lot of their games were with big punt returns, which I'm not going to discredit that. But you wonder how sustainable special teams play as week to week like that. So when you look at these two teams statistically, you have two of the best pass defenses in the country. If you look at the run game, they're similar. Georgia actually just found their rushing attack last week, putting up 300 plus against Mississippi State, kind of a breakout game for Frazier there at running back. So when you try and forecast it, it's two great pass defenses. I think I trust Gunnar Stockton in that pass offense with Georgia more than what I've seen from Arch Manning. I know they've improved over the year, over the course of the season, but you've seen Stockton do this every week. So I'm going to go Georgia to win, to cover, and would knock out Texas out of the playoff race.
Brett, always appreciate it. Glad to hear that your trip down to West Texas was as successful as possible. And we will talk to you next week. Tell everyone again where they can access Pick 6 previews.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'll be cheering on Mojo in their Texas State playoffs as we go on. And, of course, Texas Tech. I think that College Game Day going to Texas Tech, you're going to see a lot more of that the next couple of years as they ascend as a program. But, yeah, go check it out, pick6previews.com. Pick 6 Plus is the weekly stats and information package coming out every Tuesday. If you sign up midweek, I'll get you last week and a couple past editions as well. Pick 6 Previews on Twitter. But, yeah, good luck to your Irish this week on College Game Day coming out to the Keystone State. I think it's going to be mostly Irish fans in the stands, if I had to guess, but we'll see.
I have taken in a Notre Dame game at Pitt. It was an ugly, forgettable game. They won it. I've actually taken in two. 2002, Julius Jones ran for 262 yards against the Pitt Panthers. And then it was an ugly 15-12 win, I think, in 2013 against Pitt. Tommy Rees as the quarterback for the Irish. So I will there this weekend. Certainly will be watching. Brett, appreciate you as always. There he is, Brett Ciancia at Pick 6 Previews. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to Ryan and Wyatt, our producers. We're back on Thursday as we break down week 12 of the college football card. Once again, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.